Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Welcome, fellow traveler, to Aggressive Negotiations, a Star Wars podcast that explores the strange and unique corners of the Star Wars galaxy. I'm one of your hosts, Jedi Master John Mills, and with me as always is my very dear friend, Jedi Master Matthew Rushing. Matthew, let's get this party going. How you doing?
Gosh, John, I'm doing great. I'm sorry there. I was a little behind. I was hanging out on the nerdparty.com, just checking out some of our blogs and stuff and things like that. We've got some great stuff up there, so hopefully everybody will check that out soon.
Yeah, everybody should go over to nerdparty.com where they can not just read the blogs, but find out about all the other shows on the network, like Nerd Nuptial, The Senate Floor, Filibuster, and we are always growing and bringing more content to you, so go to nerdparty.com. That's a great point, Matt.
Well, and not only that, but I was just, if you're not listening to our other shows, I mean, I don't really know what you're doing. You should be listening to Nerd Nuptial, Filibuster, and The Senate Floor. Good stuff. And of course, if you're not interacting with us all on Facebook at facebook.com/thenerdparty, you're really missing out, because we put tons of great nerd news on there, not just Star Wars stuff. And it's just a wonderful community that we have, and it's continuing to grow. And hopefully everybody will join us there, because I really like hanging out with the people who listen to the Nerd Party, because I got to say, we have amazing listeners.
See, I agree with you. We have amazing listeners, and it's fun to interact with them. But I also have a great deal of fun as we carry our little quibbles, quips, and catfights onto Facebook that originate on our various shows and between the various show hosts. So that's a special little wink and a nod to the other show hosts on the network. We'll see you around in cyberspace.
That's right. GIF war is not over there on Twitter, which you can find us on at Join Nerd Party, or of course the Jedi Masters. And we had an epic GIF fight today as we were recording. It was really fun. So, I mean, this is the kind of stuff you're missing out if you're not following us on Twitter or Facebook or listening to the other shows. You're just missing out on a world of pure geek fun.
Absolutely. And speaking of geek fun, I've got a question for you this week, Matt.
Okay, I think I'm ready.
All right. Okay, we've been looking at television and stuff like that, and it sort of spurs the thought of character background stories. You know, television is a great medium for developing character arcs, but so are the standalone films. You know, we know we're going to get a Han Solo standalone film, and, you know, we're getting these backstories. And so I was thinking, throughout Star Wars, you know, expanded universe history, or even narrowing it down to just the characters from the films, backstories have not always been the strong suit of the Star Wars galaxy. There have been some characters that have gotten some real short shrift through the ages. And this was also partially spurred on by the two of us. We read and reviewed Star Wars Aftermath, Life Debt. And what I realized while reading that was Chewbacca never gets a fair shake when they delve into his backstory.
I mean, come on. Unless we're talking about the holiday special, and then it's gold.
Yeah, but even the holiday special, right? Taking that mind-numbing acid trip off the table, okay? I remember,
which is the only way to enjoy it, really.
Yeah, actually, scientifically proven. But Chewbacca, I will never forget being a kid and the very first Making of Star Wars special, narrated by William Conrad, that came out, had Harrison Ford actually on a boat talking about Chewbacca's backstory. And he said, oh, yeah, Chewbacca's 200 years old. I don't think that comes out in the film, but he's 200 years old. And that was the first little seed where I remember as a kid thinking, wow, that's a lot of years. That's amazing. And yeah, okay, let's bring the holiday special back into it, but then let's also bring in his family as explored in the Heir to the Empire trilogy, right? And now how they've sort of fumbled it with Life Debt, why can't they get Chewie right? Like, the one little snippet of happy backstory you know, for lack of a better term, comes from Revenge of the Sith. When you see Chewbacca as a mighty warrior, you actually find it's almost like seeing Worf finally, like, really win a fight. You're like, oh, now I know why everybody's afraid of Worf. And now you know why Chewbacca has this rich story. Why do they keep dropping it?
You know, that really is an interesting question to me. Part of that, I don't know if it's the language barrier, and I mean that kind of as a joke, but not really. Because, you know, Chewbacca is a character who doesn't speak in what we can understand. So, I mean, you could do a novel with Chewbacca and just basically be a translation, which would be fine, if you ask me. Or you can kind of do what they did in the Chewie comic that they brought out months back now, where Chewie just kind of did his roars and stuff, and everybody responded to him, kind of like C-3PO does with R2, so you figure out what he was talking about. But you're right. There's this rich history for this character, and you know, the only place that we really, I think, I love that I get to bring this up, get some interesting backstory for Chewie is the Clone Wars. Because Chewie shows up in the Clone Wars, and he's been captured off of Kashyyyk by the Transdosians and, you know, dumped on that planet just like their other prey has. And, you know, that's, you know, canonically the first time we ever see him, and I think that's really interesting. You know, Chewie already has experience with being a slave, basically, and that was a really nice nugget. But then, you know, like you said, we've never really gotten anything else about Chewie. And to me, the Wookiees in Episode 3 were such fascinating characters. And to see that kind of come to life was a dream of mine. But yet again, I would love to have more.
Do you know, as you're you know, sort of describing these things, something that occurs to me is, I think that possibly the problem is, and I'm gonna use the Chewbacca, you know, one shot series as an example. He's never given the center stage. Other characters, when they get their backstories, are always made the focus, and other characters are brought in supplementary to them to go through and, you know, support their story and their journey. Chewbacca is always relegated to sidekick status, even in his own book. I think maybe that's the key, is that nobody has approached Chewbacca as a main character in his own story. But he's not alone in this. Who else do you think that they have sort of blown it with backstory?
Well, right now, I have to say, you know, there's been some really interesting things, and I've liked what we're getting so far with Poe Dameron, but I have to say, to me, his comic series is leaving a lot to be desired. The first few issues of it, I just didn't like the first part of the storyline. It just is really strange. I don't know. And what's sad about that is that I love Poe, and so what I've been getting about him in, you know, the young adult novels and that kind of stuff, the little bit that we got about him in Shattered Empire and all that kind of stuff, his background there, all wonderful. But his own main comic, I'm just like, it's only okay. And it's because he's on that looking for Lor San Tekka mission, but it's like a lot of the other comics where it just keeps taking them to all of these places. It's almost like they're filling up space instead of really just telling you the story, because we want to take you to somewhere cool and weird and whacked out. We want to see flying whales and, you know, it's just, I don't know.
I think you hit on something there, though, about filling in space. Is I think that what is in Poe's case and possibly in the other cases that we might talk about is that there's only one person that I've seen story-wise whose last name isn't Lucas managed to navigate that jumping around, and that's been Filoni. And so,
yeah, definitely.
So backstory for him has always been a strong suit. So I'm going to pull him out of the equation here because he can navigate that sort of abstract. And that's not to take anything away from the other animators and directors and writers and, and everybody else that works on this, but like his name, he's head of the ship. He's the captain on his projects, and that's why I name him in specific. But I think that what it is the reason Clone Wars stands out and, you know, gets those sort of backstory moments right, even though it tells it non-sequentially, is there's a contained arc. I think that what we're seeing, and I think Poe is the best example of this, actually, is they're jumping around with an idea, but not a plan. There's no full journey mapped out. And so they're inventing, they're like paving the roads in, you know, they're starting in one section and then they stop and then they go to a later section and they do that. And then they go to the middle section and they do that. And then they put a sidewalk in the other section. Whereas they don't seem to have a full plan drawn up, so that if you're going to do it in pieces like that, you need to know where every precise point is going to be. You know what I'm saying?
I know exactly what you're saying, because, you know, another person that I think they've really fumbled the backstory for is Vader. The Vader comic has just gotten weird and whacked out. And again, I think it's a full-on representation of just filling up space. And some of it's compelling and some of it isn't. And the frustrating part is when it's not compelling, it's actually hurting the character. It's hurting me caring about his journey, because what's been interesting is the last issue, which is the penultimate issue of the Darth Vader series, was really fantastic. It was an issue in which you saw the battle inside Vader himself, like inside his mind between him and Anakin. And they have a smackdown, and it's awesome, of the idea that Darth Vader had put to death Anakin Skywalker, which was very cool, because when you think about what Obi-Wan tells Luke, which is Darth Vader betrayed and murdered your father, that's actually what's happened in Anakin Vader's mind, that he has had to annihilate that part of himself. That was really cool. But all the other weird, whacked out stuff, like so many people have probably already dropped this comic. And then you get to a revelation like that, and it's like, I don't know, maybe, and maybe they felt this. Maybe they felt like we're not servicing the character well enough, so we should probably end this at 25, then just try to keep going.
I see what you're saying with the Vader comic and, you know, how that's sort of gone awry and they have to pull the plug on it. And I think it speaks to what we talked about a couple of episodes ago about their plan for how they deal with the publishing should be, you know, should be that, should be limited series only, should not be ongoing titles. You have 12 issues, tell a story, and this is the specific point you have to end at, and those sorts of things. Like the Vader Down arc, that is, you don't need a full continuing series or a crossover story. You need a 6-issue limited series called Vader Down, and that's it. And bring the characters in, and then if you want to explain the backstory of Dr. Aphra or something like that, you have a different series. But that actually brings to mind for me, I don't know why, maybe talking about the Clone Wars cartoon and then talking about, you know, Vader's arc and everything, actually makes me think of Boba Fett. Because Boba Fett is a character who had so much cachet coming out of the original trilogy that they were desperate to build up his backstory. Going all the way back to, it was somewhere between issue 60 and 66, I think. It might have been in the late 50s, of the original Marvel Star Wars comics run, when you first met Fenn Shiza, who was another Mandalorian warrior, and you found out that Boba Fett was a slaver who worked for the Emperor, all of these, you know, sort of things that got discarded. Well, that gets thrown away when the Marvel series goes away. Then in the 90s, they had Journeyman Protectorate Jaster Mereel, and they fumbled the backstory of Boba Fett so badly that I actually came to just straight out dislike the character. It wasn't until the prequels, and I wrote about this many years ago, where it was Jango Fett that redeemed Boba Fett, because it, like, that gave me the in again to say, okay, I like this backstory. It's new, it's fresh, it's original, it's different. You threw everything away. And I think I always use it as my sort of gold standard for why I'm glad they threw away the expanded universe when they decided to, you know, move on to the new series of films. But I'd be interested, like, what did you think of the handling of Boba Fett? Were you happy with who Boba Fett was as presented in those old books, or were you looking for something new? And so when the prequels happened, you were like, yes, I get to throw away that other stuff. This is straight from George Lucas. Woohoo, it counts.
You know, for me, the Boba Fett train was never something I was on, really. I mean, he's fine, but I never had a huge, let me just put it this way, I guess I didn't care enough to have a problem with, you know, what George decided to do with the character. And, you know, for me, you know, it's interesting because Boba Fett surviving in the books, you know, being able to crawl his way out of the Sarlacc and all that. I mean, I didn't have a huge problem with that because I'm kind of used to, you know, it happens in comic books all the time. Somebody comes back to life. But, you know, the actual story that George ended up telling throughout the prequels and then, of course, with the Clone Wars, Boba Fett became a much more interesting character to me to watch because of that, you know. And I didn't need him to survive episode 6 to be an interesting character, because there's plenty to do with that character to make him cool and interesting and somebody worth following without having to, you know, do the whole resurrection of Boba Fett, because as cool as Boba Fett is, I don't think he can survive in a Sarlacc stomach.
Yeah, but see, that it was issue 81 of the original Marvel Comics run was the first time they brought him back, and it was super cool. I remember as a kid thinking it was super cool, but it was a one-shot issue where, of course, Han happens to be back on Tatooine, and it was because he was trying to get something out of the whole issue was about Han having to deal with the fact that everybody thought he was dead and sort of the aftermath of, wow, it was an aftermath story before Chuck Wendig. But it was Han Solo dealing with the aftermath of the legal ramifications of the fact that he was declared dead. And he had to go, and he had to go back to Tatooine because there was a bank that had money, and they said, sorry, you're dead. And he said, no, I'm talking to you, right? And like, it was actually a really funny moment because they had this this scene where, you know, Leia was like, what's going on? Like, Han storms off because he's like, you can talk to people like that. I was about to start hitting things. I can't do that. Well, anyway, long story short, you wind up finding out that Boba Fett was mistaken for a droid by the Jawas when he'd been spit out by the Sarlacc. And then he's got amnesia. And then but it was a great one shot. And I think that's sort of the way you bring Boba Fett back, is you bring him back for a very brief one shot sort of thing, because the story was really about Han, and Boba Fett represented that past, the old Han that he was trying to leave behind, that he had moved on from. And it was a really beautiful issue as a result, because Boba Fett, when he got his memory back, couldn't let go of the past. And so you have this big, you know, sort of like philosophical thing at the end. And it was really cool. I'm sorry to go down that rabbit hole, but just talking about Boba Fett just sort of
brings
that back.
It's funny, you're mentioning this story, and it's just kind of making me think of, you know, other characters where what's being revealed about them, I feel like is fumbling the character. And I have to say, you know, again, we talked to him about Aftermath, Life Debt, here on the latest 602 Club over there on Trek FM. And Mon Mothma, I feel like they are just character assassinating that character in that series.
That's a great point.
It is disgusting to me. I really dislike her character and what they're doing to her. I don't dislike the theme that they're using her for, but I do dislike that they're using Mon Moth because it doesn't make sense with... And we talked about that on that show, so I don't want to go down that road too much. You can check that episode out. Both John and I are on it.
Yeah, but
you know what I'm saying?
But I think it's worth exploring that territory because these characters that we're talking about, I honestly think that Boba Fett has more actual screen time, but I think in terms of verbalization, has about just as much talking time as Mon Mothma does. But here are these characters with these...
He's no good to me, dude.
Right. Well, I kind of... look, I kind of prefer Boba Fett's original voice. I just do. I get why he did it, but accents are not genetic. Whatever, whatever. Moving on. Like, I think that Mon Mothma, and here we are, we're talking about these two characters who, for a grand total of screen time, why is it even that we care about these specific characters? Do you think that there's some residual impression of them left over from old supplementary materials that would cause, in the case of Mon Mothma or even Chewbacca, a rejection of this new them that they're presenting? Now, I agree with you where Mon Mothma's presentation in the Aftermath books makes her look completely incapable of having led a rebellion. That's a problem in and of itself. Okay, that has nothing to do even with backstory. That has everything to do with why would anybody have followed this woman? But do you think that there is, do you think it's easier for younger fans to plug into what they're selling now than for us who went through it the first time?
No, I completely agree with that premise, because I feel like that's the danger with, in some ways, you know, having had this huge old EU and some of it so successful, you know. For you, John, I think it was pretty much probably successful up until you got to the Vong and then you were kind of done. But that's a long time, and that's a lot of great books that were in there. And when we talk specifically about the character of Mon Mothma, there's so much there. She becomes an incredible character, great strength, and I think is somebody that it's interesting because you watch her and you watch Leia, and they don't always agree in that those books or whatnot, but they're still strong, confident, amazing women who are running the galaxy, and now you're left with this like weak, simpering, almost hippie like crybaby that I don't see how, like you said, how did this woman engender what we saw in even just the Rogue One trailer, where she has this confidence and grace about her when she's talking to Jyn Erso. You know, she just seems commanding of the room. Even in her, you know, kind of, she's has this humility about her as well. I mean, it's just, there's so much going on there, but you immediately are pulled towards that character. And so, but I, when I'm reading, say, in the Aftermath series, I don't get any of that. Like, it's so weird. And so I just feel like, because maybe, I don't know, maybe it's you just know, there's so much time that's been pulled out and something happened to her, I don't know, family died or something, but that made her feel like that.
But what's interesting is, while we're talking about Mon Mothma, another tidbit that floats to the surface from the Jedi Academy series is, I remember specifically Kevin J. Anderson, who wrote that series. In that series, Mon Mothma was put in peril and was poisoned, and it was Lucas himself that stepped in and said, you know, by probably himself to, you know, Anderson, I don't remember how many degrees of separation there were between them, said, no, you can't kill her. She's not going to die by this point in the story. And it, like, that always comes to mind of how sort of like half involved Lucas could be at that point. Like, he was controlling enough to save Mon Mothma back then, but then was completely hands-off with things like how they dealt with, you know, the backstory of Boba Fett and stuff like that. It's so interesting how he was territorial in a non-specific way, like a very almost random sort of way. Mon Mothma really, really sort of triggers that. I also dislike the fact that they've gotten in the habit of having the characters call her Mon, because I immediately assign a Jamaican accent to that. Where they're like, we can't dismantle the fleet, Mon.
Yeah, Mon. You know, which would be fine, I think, if it was maybe just Leia that calls her that. You know, that there's that familiarity there, because they've been together for a long time. but anybody else, no, I just, that doesn't work. I think what we're kind of saying here, though, in the episode is that we love these characters and we want them to have interesting backstories. So if you are going to add to them in this way, it needs to be compelling as what we already know about them. And I think as fans, we want it to feel like it fits with what we do know about them already, and that's really important. So, you know, and when it doesn't, I think that's when we start to kind of like cringe a little bit. Part of that for us is that we've already had some experience with furthering these characters, but also part of that, I think there's an innate sense, especially for fans of our age, John, that we've spent a lifetime with these characters, so we do kind of feel like we know them intrinsically.
You know, that actually brings to mind for me just the fear I have, because we've also talked recently about canon. Is it really canon if it's not coming directly from George Lucas? Like, if they can show me like a photocopied page of notes from George Lucas's archives that this is where the character was, I will not fight them on it. You know, like, that's sort of a weird thing when it comes to these sorts of side characters. But in specific, it's something that makes me very nervous about them approaching and trying to handle somebody they've handled in the past. And I was not thrilled with the standalone novel, Kenobi, because I think that there is a great risk. You have to get somebody who is really on the top of their game, and I think hopefully speaks directly to George Lucas at some point about his missing years. I would love to learn about two different time periods. I would love to learn about Kenobi when he was a younger man.
Yep.
When he was sent to the Agra Corps and Qui-Gon pulled him out and all of those sorts of things, because I'm pretty sure that was established as part of his backstory by Lucas.
And that was a great young adult series too by Jude Watson, which I have all of them, and I've slowly been making my way through, but wonderful books about, you know, that character. So yeah, completely agree there.
And then of course the years between Sith and A New Hope, like that we keep getting teased with. You know, we have the, okay, first, because we're talking about character backstory and missing years here, I want it out in the open that I was not thrilled with the Kenobi book, but I believe you were pretty satisfied with it.
I was pretty satisfied with John Jackson Miller's Kenobi. I thought that it was a good book. What I liked about it is that it set Kenobi pretty early in his stay on Tatooine. So it was really about the growing pains of growing into, you know, the hermit, basically, and the struggle that is for a character who has just been so active. I mean, specifically, think about watching the Clone Wars, and I mean, Kenobi is just a guy who's always been on a go, you know, and he has a patience issue sometimes. He's not always as patient as he needs to be, and I can imagine sitting out there in the desert with nobody to commune with, but Aopi gets a little bit boring, especially with the farts, you know. So,
no.
It
why
yeah.
do you have to bring that? Why? Come on. One of the few things that I harp on.
What
come
John
on.
Jackson Miller, I thought, did well was to capture that Kenobi in that place where he wants to be somebody who is more active in helping people, and he's trying to find, how does he do that? Can he do that? Is it even good for him to do that? And so that's what I liked, the struggle there. The only thing I would have liked to have seen more is there's no actual communication between him and Qui-Gon in that book yet, and that's what I really wanted to see. But other than that, the rest of the book I thoroughly enjoyed. As basically it was Kenobi figuring out what his life on Tatooine should look like. And he makes some mistakes in that. And that's what I also liked. Like, he doesn't do everything right here, and he almost puts his mission in jeopardy.
Okay.
And that's what I thought was really interesting.
Yeah. I don't object to that premise. And I think that that John Jackson Miller is a fine author, and I enjoyed the book. It just didn't. There were a couple of story choices that I personally disagreed with, is all. That becomes just a personal preference thing. But, you know, it's interesting. Let's say that they do it. They are going to make a Kenobi movie. John Jackson Miller's book is now Legends. It is now no longer an official source. How do you feel about them steamrolling it? Because they inevitably will, given the fact that you think that it is the right thing that they, like, let's say they take Obi-Wan and they do something that completely controverts facts in that book. How do you feel about them throwing that one, since it was so late in the expanded line?
You know, I don't have a problem with it. I love John Jackson Miller's book, but I think even he would say, you know, yeah, do a great Kenobi movie. And if they use any kind of inspiration at all from that, in the same way that, you know, Dave Filoni does with, in fact, let me just put it this way. Dave Filoni needs to probably be the writer of the Kenobi movie. I think anybody knows Kenobi better than Dave Filoni. And the only person who knows Kenobi better is George Lucas.
I would say that's a valid point. That's a very valid point. Yeah.
And specifically, since I know that, you know, Dave has had conversations with George about all of Star Wars, the plan for the Clone Wars was to go through the end of Order 66 and a little bit beyond. I think Dave has a good understanding. So put him in charge of the writing, and I think you come up with a fantastic story. And especially since you still have some incredible characters out there that are a part of the Kenobi saga that could come into play. I mean, we could even go visions-wise and get a Maul Kenobi showdown on Tatooine, because he's found Kenobi, he's found, and he, you know, Maul's figured out how Luke is, and it's Obi-Wan has to hunt him down to keep him from, you know, maybe getting to the Emperor or whatnot. Like, just this is the kind of stuff that you could do that would just be, you know, incredible. And Ewan McGregor's the perfect age.
Yes. I don't think that there is a single Star Wars fan, casual or hardcore, that when you say Kenobi movie between episode 3 and 4, that would turn their nose up at it. I think everybody I think that is the one thing where you would have 100% buy-in. Every single fan would say, sold, I'm going, I've got to see it. And then they announce that Uwe Boll is the director, and everybody gets a little nervous. But that's a story for another day. Okay, so to sort of round it out then, we've talked about characters that they fumbled. And of course, anybody listening, you know, let us know your take. Have we misjudged anything?
Definitely.
Have we, you know, missed the mark in our judgments? Have, you know, is there a character we overlooked that you think is an even more egregious example of a film character who didn't get the right backstory treatment? But to round this out for us, you know, tonight, Matt, what can they do to fix it? They've already had missteps with the new chronology. What can they do to fix it? What, like, if Bob Iger calls you up and he says, Matthew Rushing, I know you can help me solve this problem. We've had a couple of missteps. What do you tell him? He asks for 3 things or less that they can do to make sure that this backstory problem ceases and doesn't become a problem in the future.
I think one of the main things, John, is focus. You need correct focus, and you need specific storyline elements so that as you move forward with the character and the storyline to which you're telling, you are on target. And I think that's part of any good storytelling, is knowing where the character ends up, knowing where the storyline ends up, so you can write to that point. And I think my favorite example of that has to be J.K. Rowling understanding where the Harry Potter story ended up, where most of the characters ended up, so that there was no... Certain things, minor things changed about the series for her, she said, but at the same time, the main thrust of the story was always what it ended up being. And I think that determined focus is what helped people fall so in love with that series, and what made it such a success. And so I think with Star Wars, you know, we have this connected universe, but there are also certain places that we know where characters kind of end up. So with, say, with a character like Kenobi, we know where he ends, you know, but there are missing pieces to that story. So filling them in a way that has focus and determination really creates, I think, something interesting. And like you said, make it limited series runs, whether it's comics or you just do one or two books, maybe three at the most with a character like that, so that, again, the story that you tell isn't trying to do too many things. It's only servicing the one thing, you know, which is Darth Vader, Obi-Wan Kenobi, Mon Mothma, Boba Fett, whoever it is.
Okay.
Make sure that the story is about that character first and services them first.
I'm down with that. I think that you and I are of a like mind with that, because I think the only way you can do that and have that focus for these specific side characters, not the new ones, like Poe is a different thing. The story group can give him focus and, you know, other characters like that. But if you're dealing with an established character like Mon Mothma or Boba Fett or, you know, anybody else, I think either if it's not George Lucas himself, then it's either his notes or somebody like Dave Filoni that you know that he has had hours mm-hmm. and hours of yeah. conversation with, where they can bring those ideas to bear. Because if there's one thing we know, is that Lucas had this giant tapestry, and yeah, he, like Rowling, would change things. Things would evolve. Tolkien did the same thing. You know, a creator creates and evolves things as they create. So there is a, you know, it's not necessarily that everything's written in stone, but at the very least, you have this store of knowledge that Disney, I think, would be foolish not to bring to bear on this sort of thing. But that, I think, is a question, is a decision that we're never going to get to take part of. But do you know what we can take part of as fans? We can go over to lootcrate.com/nerdparty, and we can take advantage of the special discount at checkout by entering nerdparty. And Loot Crate is a really cool service for nerds, geeks, however you want to call yourself, for all of these exclusive collectibles, hats, you know, different wearables, t-shirts, different items, and one-of-a-kind items that can come to you. And if you go to lootcrate.com/nerdparty, enter the code nerdparty at checkout, you will get a discount on your subscription. We just had an unboxing video on our Facebook page. Everybody loved it. Unboxing is all the rage with the kids. So I think you can look for more Loot Crate unboxing coming in the future. But go over to facebook.com/thenerdparty and you can see an unboxing and what type of stuff Loot Crate is sending to you.
And it's totally worth it. I mean, you know, you look at the what you got in that wonderful video that Tristan put together, and it was just fantastic. So I encourage everybody to go check it out. I think you really like it, and they help out the show. Which, you know, it's speaking of ways that people can help out the show, John, you know, we're doing our review contest there on iTunes, and we would love you to just hit us up on iTunes, give us a star rating and review, and you could win some really cool stuff. I've got some exclusives here from the Funko Smuggler's Bounty Box, which I can't wait to give to someone. So yeah, just hit us up with a star rating and review, written review there, and you'll be entered to win, and we can't wait to give it away. But more than anything, we just want to say thank you to you guys who've already given us reviews, and if you're thinking about giving us a review and haven't, well, why haven't you?
And now's the perfect time, like you said.
It is the perfect time.
And, you know, I want to say also that there is no such thing as a bad time to reach out to you online. So why don't you let people know where they can find you?
Well, John, you know, that is so true. I am all over the place online these days. You can find me on Twitter at MattRushing02. You can also find me doing The Orb on Trek FM, our dedicated Deep Space Nine show with Chris Jones. I'm also doing Literary Treks with Dan and Bruce, where we talk about the books, the comics of Star Trek, as well as, we mentioned a few times today, John, and everybody should go check this out, is the 602 Club, which is the General Geek Show there on Trek FM. And we talk about everything that we can under the sun, as much as we can fit in, have time to watch or read. And sometimes that involves Star Wars. So make sure that you check that out. And John, I know that you are just a plethora of wonderfulness and knowledge online. So where can everybody find you?
Oh, well, gosh, just look for Kessel Junkie. My name whispered on the wind will bring me to you. Failing that,
it is true.
You can find me on Twitter. You can also find me over on the Trek FM network as part of Stage 9, a podcast exploring the non-Trek work of Trek creators. And you can also find me over on Words with Nerds with my pal Craig, where we open Sith holocrons regularly and use them to motivate ourselves.
You know, I think that's a great way to put that show, John.
I think so. Sith holocrons, we have a whole case full of them. Unfortunately, they only have data on how the First Order is being funded. Kind of a bummer.
Well, you know, John, I think there's only one thing left to say. I think it's time to close negotiations.
Matthew, negotiations are closed.
Join the revolution. Join the Nerd Party.